Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When it comes to home insurance, Geico works for you. And since I'm the Geico Gecko, I'm here working for you too.
Hey Gecko, can you record my voicemail greeting?
No problemo.
You've reached the amazing Rita. She's probably busy right now teaching music theory to neighborhood birds or telling a total stranger how they can bundle home and car insurance with Geico to get the discounts they deserve. But rest assured, she'll get back to you once she's done brightening her little corner of the world.
Did that sound all right?
Nailed it. No notes.
Let Geico work for you. Get more with Geico.
When Alicia Bromfield fell pregnant at the age of 21, she was nervous, but she was also absolutely ecstatic at the thought of becoming a mother. She couldn't wait to meet her baby. She worked really hard in her job at Home Depot because she wanted to become financially independent. But what she didn't know was that her supervisor had developed a twisted obsession with her, and he used his position of authority over her. This is the story of a young expectant mother who just wanted to make a good life for her unborn child, and a monster who resorted to murder when he realized he could not be with her. This is the tragic murder of Alicia Bromfield and her unborn baby girl, Ava. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's look at Alicia Bromfield. She was born on August the 28th, 1990. She lived in Will County, Illinois. She had 3 brothers and 1 sister, and she was adored by her siblings, and I mean truly adored by her family, full stop. She genuinely comes from a very supportive background. She was absolutely raised up by the people around her. They saw what an incredible, talented, beautiful, intelligent young woman she was, and they miss her greatly, of course. Sherry, her mother, she talks about the fact that Alicia used to love having fun. She was actually really good at not taking life too seriously. Although having said that, she was working really hard, so she knew how to commit, and she was also deeply loyal. I often think that the thing about loyalty psychologically is, on one level, when it's shared with people of meaning to us who don't use and abuse us, it's a wonderful quality. But loyalty can also be deeply problematic because it's part of your nature. And sometimes it means that you can be loyal in situations and circumstances that actually don't deserve that loyalty. A friend of Alicia's said that she was the type of person who just had that uncanny ability to make you just feel special when you were around her. So she would make people feel visible. And I think that that's a powerful, powerful characteristic, because often we understand in life that we aren't the most important person in other people's lives. It's something that's quite difficult as you grow up to realize, because you want to be the center of the world for people. But actually, over time, you get better at understanding that really people are living their lives and don't take it too personally when they don't notice you're going through a hard time, or when they don't seem to make you feel good or special when you're with them, because the truth is they're dealing with their own stories. But Alicia was somebody who had the power to actually do that, to make you feel that you had real meaning when she shared space with you. She was said to have really contagious laughter, and she was very kind-hearted. She was very hardworking. She was incredibly determined, and she did everything that she could to be independent, even though she had, as I said, an incredibly supportive background within her family network. Alicia had graduated from Joliet Catholic Academy. That was in 2008. And when she was 21, she was attending Western Illinois University, and she was studying forensic science and criminal justice. So she was a very bright cookie, and actually she was very close to completing that at the time of her death. Alicia worked at Home Depot, where she set up displays for grand flower growers, and she'd actually been working there quite a few years. She started working there when she was just 16 years of age. And even though she was doing her university degree, she had carried on working in that position because obviously it meant that she was able to pay for her studies and look after herself financially. Now, there was an issue where she worked, and that issue came in the form of her manager, a guy called Brian Cooper. first of all, he was over 10 years older than her. So obviously very senior in his age in comparison. But it was as if from the get-go, he was really interested in Alicia in an inappropriate way. He was making sexual advances towards her from the get-go. And Alicia's a very beautiful young girl. She was not interested whatsoever in a romantic relationship with Brian. And with respect, it wasn't just that they weren't, shall we say, comparatives when you think about who you'd end up being with in a relationship because of the age. It's actually also to do with the fact that he's quite a strange character. He made her feel uncomfortable. He made a lot of people feel uncomfortable. So as a potential partner, he just wasn't in the running for it. And he hated that. And because he was actually in a senior position to her at work, he used that senior position and her need for a job to abuse his power. He would literally force her to meet him outside of work. He would get her to walk his dogs. He'd also say that if she didn't comply with what he was asking, then he'd literally cut her hours down. So she's now in a situation where the guy who's got power over what she earns is basically saying, unless you do A, B, or C, there will be consequences. And she was struggling with that. She's a young person. Bear that in mind. To people in their 30s or 40s or 50s, it may feel, well, realistically, just say no to these scenarios. But that's because you have years and years of professional experience where you realise that people in this powerful position has no right to actually demand these things of you. But when you're young, you don't have a lot to compare it to. Hey, other people might have this happen in their jobs, and you don't want to lose a position that is helping you to survive financially. So she's really in a rock and a hard place. She doesn't want to do it, but she's doing it because she feels it's a way of making sure that she keeps the peace between him and her, and also that she keeps her job. And bear in mind, their relationship was purely platonic. And I use the word platonic, but I don't necessarily feel that's the appropriate term, because understandably, she isn't involved or interested in a relationship physically, intimately with Brian. But when I think about the words platonic, I believe that that represents something that is considered consensual, that you both agree that the relationship is platonic, you're both okay with that, it's a friendship. Whereas that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a man in power abusing that position and making a young woman feel that she has to have some kind of relationship with him, albeit non-physical, because he's demanding it. And obviously, if he's doing that, it's because he isn't interested in a platonic relationship with Alicia. He wants more. And if he can't have more, well, he's going to demand her time in other ways to punish her for not doing exactly what he wants. Now, bear in mind, Alicia's family and friends, they are aware that she is seeing him outside of work, but they also know why. They're aware that it's about self-preservation. It's about the reality that she has to keep her job and she feels that this is the only way forward. And it must be very difficult for family members and friends of Alicia to not intervene. But very rarely do people do that. She's a young woman, a young adult. She's not a child anymore. They have to respect her choices, but it must have frustrated them deeply. And also, Brian is going around telling people that Alicia is actually his girlfriend. And obviously, from what I've already described, his behaviour indicates that he wanted something that was far more than friends. And it's very disturbing to imagine that a man a decade older than her in a powerful position is not just abusing his power over her, he's actually making up stories about the relationship that he has with her. That's deeply disconcerting. It would be very awkward for her to hear that information. And also, it blurs the boundaries for her because understandably, some people might believe what he's saying and therefore may feel that he has license to treat her in a different way to how he treats other people. Alicia's friend, Olivia, she said that one of the things that was very striking about Brian is that he seemed to go out of his way to treat Alicia really badly. So he would do things such as forcing her to come into work at times that she actually wasn't really able to. So if she had a doctor's appointment, he'd force her to come into work. If she needed a lunch break, he'd deny her the lunch break. And her mother said that she actually was told by a daughter that Brian would call her names such as a slut, such as a whore. And
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
This is terrifying because this is breaking every professional boundary possible. But it's also insinuating a resentment that Brian has towards Alicia. We can feel that sense of, if I can't have you, no one can have you, building up. And using those words and slurs, yes, it's about humiliating her. Yes, it's about making her feel small. But it's also representative psychologically of a deep resentment, a projection that he's feeling angry that he can't control that element of her behavior, that he has no control over who she spends intimate time with. And therefore, imagining that makes him angry and leads to him actually using these slurs towards her. Now, Alicia did actually report him on at least one occasion, and that's where the story should end. Because if a manager is using terms such as a slut and whore, if they're denying you your free time, such as your lunch break, if they're making your life consistently difficult so that you can't even go to doctor's appointments, and you go ahead and you say, this is happening, that's harassment, pure and simple. And he needs to be disciplined accordingly, and it needs to be monitored. And if that doesn't take place, that is a massive failure on the organisation who employs that individual's party. It's as simple as that. They are responsible for not doing anything about it. They take no action whatsoever, and he gets to stay as her manager. So now, not only is she dealing with the fact that he is highly inappropriate, deeply unprofessional, he's also being validated by his employer, because once she's complained, as opposed to them doing anything about it, they've done nothing. And that gives license to somebody to actually amplify and escalate their behavior. If there are no consequences, then won't change at all. He's not going to. Now, in 2012, Alicia becomes pregnant. It turns out that the guy that she was involved with, somebody that she was attending the university with, he wasn't interested, basically, in being involved in the kid's life. So even though she is looking at becoming a single mother, she wants to still go ahead with it. And her mother recalls when she actually told her that she was pregnant, she was kind of sat on the floor, and mother kind of knew that there was something going on, asked what was wrong, and her daughter said that, you know, she had something to tell her, and her mother actually guessed. So she said, are you pregnant? And she said that she was, and they said that they would support her as a family, which is just such a lovely response. She wasn't chastised, she wasn't made to feel bad, she was told wholeheartedly that it would be okay, and that they would be there and be present for her. So even though the father isn't going to be in her life, that baby is going to be loved by everybody around and is going to be part of the family that she herself has been brought up in. And it's a loving family. So even though she's scared, she's super excited. She's really nervous, apparently, but the prospect of becoming a mother just made her feel joy. She also found out during the pregnancy that she was going to have a baby girl. And she named her a beautiful name, Ava Lucille. And I think it's so important to represent Ava Lucille. We're talking about a little girl that was growing in her mother's belly and who was desperately wanted and already very much loved. When we're talking about a case where a mother is murdered and the unborn child dies as a consequence of that, often it seemed like a single homicide, but it isn't. Ava Lucille had already become part of Alicia's family. And arguably, the reality is therefore that when she is murdered, the individual murdering her knows that he is killing two people, not one. And That doesn't make it any worse. Of course, the reality is Alicia's life singularly is the most precious thing and is of incalculable meaning to this world. But it just adds another layer of sadism, another layer of horror when you consider that Ava Lucille was in Alicia's belly at the time of Alicia's murder. Now, in August 2012, Brian is exerting power over Alicia once again. He has his sister's wedding coming up, so he basically wants to take her as his date. She's a very pretty girl. He wants to show her off. He's living this delusion where essentially he's telling people that Alicia is his girlfriend, and basically by taking her with him, it evidences probably to all those people that he's lied to that actually he is in a relationship. But again, psychologically, emotionally, and even on a social level for Alicia, that's going to be very difficult and problematic. She's pregnant for a start. She's not going to want people to think that he's the father, but also she knows that he is going to punish her at work unless she goes ahead and goes with him. But it feels like at this moment in time, Alicia is also starting to realize that what is happening to her at work is just not acceptable. She's growing in confidence. She's about to become a mother and she's fiercely independent. So this power that he uses over her, that he wields over her, it's weakening to some degree, I would say. She was actually really reluctant to go to his sister's wedding, but he was very insistent again. He threatens her job security if she doesn't go ahead and fulfill his wishes. And she's feeling that this is obviously a problem because bear in mind, she's going to have a baby and that she has some security because she's having that baby with this job. There are options for her because there are particular programs the actual Home Depot offer individuals who, for example, have children. There is a support network and strategy. She's going to find that incentive really important. So she feels that when she's balancing the odds, yes, it's not ideal, but she's probably better to go with him because she needs to keep that job. She's almost 7 months pregnant at this point. She needs the money and she needs that security. Now, Sherry, Alicia's mum, she was really concerned about her daughter going. She won't for 1 minute have envisaged the horror that plays out, but she had that instinct that there is something really off about Brian. And she didn't want her daughter spending time with him because she understood that Brian's intentions were not appropriate. And also the treatment towards her daughter was not appropriate. When we think about men or women who were infatuated with another party, yes, they may want to spend time with that individual who may be disinterested in them in an emotional and intimate way. But when they spend time with them, you'd imagine that they want to impress them, be kind to them, shower them with love and care and attention in a really positive way. Because if there was the slightest bit of hope that you may at some point in the future be able to romantically engage with them, you want to have been on your best behavior. That's not how Brian is. Brian is abusive. Brian is domineering. Brian is nasty. So for Sherry, she can see that they're not just dealing with the hallmarks of a man who's interested in her daughter. They're dealing with the hallmarks of an individual who's relatively sadistic. And she understands that. And she's concerned for her daughter. I'm not saying that she was concerned for her daughter's safety. I don't believe that Sherry ultimately thought that her daughter was being taken to her death. But I think that she knew that Brian was a deeply flawed individual and that he had a malevolence about his nature. She really hated how he was treating her daughter at work. She knew that he made her feel deeply uncomfortable with all these unwanted advances. But even though she expressed this to Alicia, Alicia said that it was going to be okay and that she had been very clear with Brian that they were only going to go as friends and that also they had a room at the Sand Bay Beach Resort and that was going to be at the same hotel that the rest of the wedding party was staying in. So you can understand that for her mum, Sherry, yes, it's not ideal. She doesn't like the guy. She's worried about her daughter, but what harm can come at this place because they're at the wedding place with everybody else. She's going to have lots of people around her, so hopefully it will be one of those awkward stays and then a line can be drawn under it. So we get to August the 18th, 2012. It's a long drive to where the wedding is. So Alicia and Brian set off relatively early that morning. The wedding was being held in Door County in Wisconsin. It was about 4.5 hours journey for them. And they'd planned, as I said, staying at the hotel the night after the wedding reception. because it's likely going to be too late to make the long drive home afterwards. She was heavily pregnant. Anybody who's ever been pregnant knows that you get, shall we say, a little bit exhausted, usually by early afternoon on a daily level. So she's going to be knackered, and it's likely that Brian's going to be intoxicated. Is it a wedding? Most people at weddings like to have one or two or three or 15 drinks, so driving back is not going to be an option, and that makes sense. And even though she would likely not be drinking because she was pregnant, as I said, she's going to want to get her head down after a long day. Now, after she arrives at the wedding venue, she calls her mum. She said that her and Brian had got into this argument and they were ultimately going to miss the wedding and come home. Now, this really shocked her mother, Sherry, because first of all, Brian is meant to be walking his little sister down the aisle, so he's a key player, and that's going to cause major problems with his family if he doesn't turn up because he's had a row with a colleague. But later on, after she'd had the conversation with her mum, Alicia actually texted her to say that they were going to stay for the wedding after all. But there is something that Alicia had also realised at this point, and that is that they weren't booked in to stay at the same hotel as the rest of the wedding party. He had actually booked a different venue for them to stay over that night. Now, that's really disturbing because, of course, they've driven there. So if he's going to get intoxicated, it's likely he's going to have to drive to the other place. So it means he doesn't have any care or compassion about what danger that could put her in. But also it means that she hasn't got the security of the rest of the wedding party. But she's there now. She can't get home without him. So I can imagine that she was in a really difficult situation and she must have been concerned about what was potentially planned in his mind for them later that same evening. But Sherry's informed by Alicia, as I've said, that they're going to stay at the wedding and he's going to go and walk his sister down the aisle. Now, clearly, when you piece that together, it's because this man had intentions. He must have premeditated what he wanted to get from Alicia that evening. I believe that it was based on the reality that he felt that he could get some intimacy from her in spite of her protestations, in spite of the fact that she'd said no to him many times. Or maybe it was that he didn't care whether she said no. Maybe he had made a decision that she would succumb to him no matter what. But whatever was in his mind, what we do know is the following day on August the 19th, 2012, Brian walks into the shop at a petrol station. His clothes were literally dripping. They were soaked through. He then asks to use the phone in the store. He said that it was an emergency. And initially, the actual person working at the petrol station calls the emergency responders for him. And then it's handed over to him so that he can speak to the person who is the actual dispatcher. And he says that he's basically calling to report the murder of Alicia Bromfield. Literally. He just admits that he has murdered this poor pregnant young woman.
Do you know for sure that a murder occurred?
Yes.
Do you know if it was today that this happened?
Last night.
Did you witness it?
Yes.
You witnessed it. Okay. Do you know where her body is?
In the room. Sand Bay Beach Resort.
Do you know who murdered her?
I did.
You did? Okay. Was it an accident or were you angry or?
It was intentional.
During the call, the dispatcher asks, do you know who murdered her? And Brian replies, I did. And you can hear in the voice of the actual dispatcher, they're audibly surprised. And they say, was it an accident? Were you angry? And Brian literally interrupts to say it was intentional. The fact that he then goes on to say, I'm a good person besides what I did last night. And also says that Alicia's family is going to flip. He says everyone's going to flip. The very fact that he says, I'm a good person besides what I did last night. Yeah, that's not how it works, Brian. It doesn't work where we're like, well, you haven't murdered and brutalized a pregnant woman before, so at the end of the day, on a percentage level, seems like you're a good guy. It's the reality of your worst actions that actually demonstrate the kind of human you are. It's the depravity that you're capable of and act out that lends us to understand your character. Serial killers aren't serial killers 100% of the time. They're probably only serial killers 1% of the time. The other 99% of the time, they might be charming colleagues who you go out and have fun with. They're still a serial killer. You're still a brutal, grotesque, heinous murderer. You don't get to say, I'm a good person most of the time, just not when I'm murdering innocent pregnant girls. Just not when I'm calling them sluts and whores at work. Just not when I'm exerting my power over an innocent party.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Is basically coerced into hanging out with me, even though she doesn't want to. I'm a good person, apart from all of those things. Understandably, because he's admitted that he's killed Alicia. He's then arrested by the Door County Sheriff's deputies. They arrive at the store while he's still literally on the phone. He's then taken immediately to the police station. Now, other investigators are called out to the actual hotel because Ryan has said that this is where he has taken the life of Alicia. When they walk into the hotel room, when I've listened to the interviews of the actual investigators who did that, it's clear it's deeply affected them because of what they see. First of all, bear in mind, Alicia's heavily pregnant, and it shouldn't add even more horror to this scene, because obviously a deceased person who's been taken in such a horrendous way, that matters full stop. And it's grotesque that you would witness something like this. But there is something about a pregnant woman that speaks of vulnerability, that requires protection. They are individuals who are carrying another life. And for the most part, it's why people will stand up from their chair on a bus or a train for somebody who's pregnant, because you know that person needs a little bit of extra support. So for those investigators walking in and seeing an individual in a very vulnerable state murdered in such a grotesque manner, it's going to affect them. And the investigators said that it was almost like she'd been staged, as if she was sleeping to some degree. Her body's naked, and even though it was on the floor, he'd basically propped a pillow under her head, and he'd also partially covered her with the blanket. They found out that she had suffered from broken bones, she had contusions, she had hematomas, and the autopsy results later actually confirmed that her death was suffocation. So she had put up a fight. She had really fought hard for her life. Those were obvious defensive injuries, but it also demonstrates that the attack was sustained. He didn't let up. He was going to harm her. He was going to fatally harm her in this case, no matter how hard she fought. Now, the interrogation takes place, and of course, he's already admitted what he's done. So when they start to question Brian about how this had occurred, he admitted that he wanted more than a friendship with Alicia. And we all know that because of his prior behaviour. But what does that speak to about this man's personality, about this man's character? An individual who believes that you achieve relationship by force. He's angry that she won't be intimate with him and therefore she deserves his wrath. The fact that he wanted more, that should end there. We're all in situations at times where we like somebody and they don't want to be with us. You draw a line under that. You accept it. Sometimes you move on because you don't want to be around them because it's too painful for you. But you don't demand that they change their opinion. You don't demand that they achieve a situation with you that makes it work for you over their needs. That's not how these things work. So he said that because he'd made it clear that he wanted more with her, they'd ended up arguing whilst at his sister's wedding the day before, and that he had at this point realised that as a result of that particular argument, there wasn't going to be a friendship anymore. So he didn't feel that when they returned home, they were actually going to be able to continue any kind of relationship. So when they went back to the room, Brian was obviously still reeling from this. So he suggested that they needed to watch a TV show together that coming Sunday, because he obviously, in spite of the fact that she's clearly said, I don't want to carry on a friendship with you, I don't want to be under your control anymore, he's future focusing and testing that theory out. Okay, well, you've said all this, how firm in this decision is she? Well, I'm going to suggest watching a TV show the following Sunday, and I'll see how she responds to that. When she responds, understandably, with a no thanks, you absolute freak, I don't want to be within 100 feet of you, because that's how she's going to feel, isn't it? Who wouldn't say no? Of course she's going to refuse the offer. And again, she reinforces at that point that they wouldn't be seeing each other outside of work again. And he said that at that point, when she'd just been honest about her feelings, after putting up with all of this abuse for such a long time, it basically triggered him. Somehow, he's the victim in that moment. She has made it clear that her intentions are not to be with him, even though she had made that clear always from the get-go. At this moment, at this point in time, apparently it was too much. And he gets more and more frustrated. She was lying on the bed. He then attacks her, climbs on top of her, and then he starts to strangle her with his hands. At this point, she is pleading, understandably, for her life, but actually, what is at the forefront of her thoughts? Her unborn child. She's actually saying, don't do this to me because of the baby. Think of the baby. And that is exactly who Alicia is and was. That even in that moment, even when she is having her life stolen, her main consideration, her main priority, her main concern is her little baby, Ava. The very distinction in that scene is the way that he thinks only of himself and she thinks of her unborn child. You could not have two dissimilar worlds in the same room at such a level as this. It's so uncanny that these two human beings are sharing the same space, so different from one another. Like I said, one egocentric, violent, dark, malevolent, one beautiful, light, caring, compassionate. And the battle is lost because unfortunately she does not have the strength to dominate a man that can only be described in that moment as a demon. When she was fighting, she actually bit his finger. They ended up rolling off the bed, and this is finally where she loses her life. He chokes her to death as she lies on the floor. He said that it took her a few minutes to actually kill her. But the brutality and depravity doesn't end there, because Ryan then goes on to say that he ended up, after he had murdered her, having sex with her. So after he has strangled her, after he has stolen the oxygen from her unborn baby, in the moments that her baby will have been dying, he violated her. He then said that he'd taken her clothes off because he wanted to see her naked, because clearly she would never have done that of her own volition. She didn't want anything to do with him in that level. Also, he said that that's when he'd taken his pants off, that's when he had sex with her for about 2 to 3 minutes. And then, allegedly, because we could only ever take his word for it, this is how it played out, we can only imagine that these things had been said and this situation had unfolded in the way that he's telling it, because there was only one party who was alive. But he said that he was at this point overcome with the reality of his actions, so he then decided that he needed to take his own life. So he used a knife and a corkscrew, but apparently he was unsuccessful. He then went and slept in the bath. Then once he woke up, he drove to a park, swam out in a lake, and tried to drown himself. I always find it really strange that these kind of individuals are so adept at killing others, but seem to struggle to end their own life. Because it's going to be something that is quite difficult to achieve if you can swim, drowning yourself, because a survival instinct kicks in. Also, a corkscrew, not the most useful thing to take your own life with, but there are other methods that should you really wish to, and I'm not suggesting that he should wish to kill himself. At the end of the day, it's terrible when people take their own lives, full stop. But what I'm saying is, when you actually go ahead and try, for the most part, they're not the most obvious ways of doing it. So I don't genuinely believe that this was him wanting to die, but I do think this is him trying to create a story where it makes him seem remorseful, which he isn't. It's as simple as that. And like I said, egocentric narcissists, they tend not to like their own demise happening because they like to be masters of their own story. They don't like other people having control over that. So arguably, he probably would think too much of himself to end his own life, in spite of the fact that he has ended the life of such a beautiful young girl and her unborn baby. Even though he admits to the investigators that he genuinely couldn't bring himself to kill himself, it's at that point that he thinks, well, I've got no other choice. He knows there's a body at the place that they'd stayed. He knows that he's going to be caught for this crime because at the end of the day, he was the last one with her. His DNA and forensics will be all over her body. So that's why he goes to the petrol station. That's why he gets them to call 911. And that's why he turns himself in. And he says during the interrogation, he absolutely had meant to kill her. So at no point is he backing off from that reality. He's very clearly, very pertinently acknowledging, no, I wanted her dead. I wanted to end her life. Also, he indicates that he put some thought into it as well. And he basically readily confesses to everything. He provides the information. It's not even as if the interrogators have to prompt him. And I would say that probably one of the most disturbing areas of this is just how matter of fact he is when he's talking about what he did and how he did it. Because even though we are discussing someone that we expect to have a brutal nature because of his actions, there is nothing more telling than the tone of an individual perpetrator's voice. People do kill in crimes of passion. And you hear that when they're being interrogated. You can hear the horror, the realization, the remorse, regret. That's not what you're hearing where Brian is concerned. It's something that demonstrates a complete lack of connection with the true horror of what he's done. And it also denotes the lack of, I would say, care and compassion towards the victim. She isn't really that important whatsoever in his world. It's just that she didn't give him what he wanted, and therefore she deserves to be punished. The police obviously seize Brian's technology. They search his house. And they find more disturbing things which are around Alicia. So first of all, it's clear that he's got this obsession with her. He's been spying on her for a very long time. He even had a camera in his bathroom that had been pointed at his toilet. Why? Well, because Alicia used to go there after she'd walked his dogs and she would use the bathroom. He'd even got a spy camera at the hotel that they stayed at on the night of the murder, and he'd hidden that in the rubbish bin in the bathroom. And that actually captured footage of Alicia showering and of her using the toilet. So the voyeurism level there is enormous. He's a sexual predator. He's a sexual deviant. The fact that it was not a contact crime until her murder is irrelevant. He is literally filming her against her knowledge, and it would be completely against her will to capture her in vulnerable scenarios and situations of undress. So in September 2012, with all this in mind, Brian is charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder. So 2 counts of first-degree intentional homicide for the deaths of Alicia and, of course, her unborn child, Ava. Also 1 count of third-degree sexual assault. And isn't it important to represent the fact that her little girl was murdered as well? You know, to actually have that child's life validated in such a way in a court, I find that really paramount, because there are so many cases where unborn babies are not considered a part of the case when their life has literally been stolen before it even began. Now, though the trial was due to begin in the January of 2013, Brian went ahead and filed a motion for an adjournment, And the reason that he did that is they said that he hadn't received the materials from the state that he'd apparently requested. And the first time he asked for an adjournment, it was granted. And the trial ended up being postponed on two occasions, first in April, then to June 2013. But you can imagine for Alicia's family, who are going to be dealing with the absolute catastrophic fallout of not only her death, but the death of her baby, managing that traumatic loss, and then having the perpetrator causing a postponement, which means that they're literally waiting months and months and months to start the hearing. That in itself is torture. The trauma is additionalized by that time span. It's not that getting it done quickly is going to lessen the grief. It just means it closes one area of what they're managing, in this case, seeing that particular perpetrator, I don't know, go to hell, for example. So for them, it will be absolutely torturous. So Brian initially, would you believe it? Bear in mind what I've told you. Bear in mind what I've told you. He's literally gone into a petrol station. He's admitted what he's done. He's been interviewed where he's gone through every single detail in Technicolor. We're not talking about anything being difficult to recall. He's very effective at going through every detail, but apparently he's not guilty. Yeah, he's not guilty. That's what he initially says. Now, I don't know who was around him when he entered that plea of not guilty. Maybe it was a group of clowns, or it was his defense attorney probably going, why are you doing that? This is a terrible idea. And he's just so superior and arrogant. He's like, well, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm not guilty. But unsurprisingly, in the run-up to his trial, it suddenly changes. So then he changes this to a combined plea of not guilty and guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. Yeah. Unbelievable. So now he's saying, I'm not just not guilty. If I actually am guilty, it's because I didn't know what I was doing. There was something going on, had no control over my behavior whatsoever. But then he just goes ahead and changes his plea back to not guilty. I do feel that at this point, there should be a Simon Cowell-esque big red butter, which is usually used for a good thing, to just hit so that the person is, I don't know, escorted quickly to the center of the earth. And
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Literally obliterated in flames. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that if one of those could be fitted, Brian would be the accurate candidate for such a repercussion. Honestly, bear in mind, there is a family here who know that their loved one was brutalized, that their unborn child that they were so looking forward to having in their lives was murdered, and he's saying, I didn't know what I was doing, and by the way, I'm not guilty. And then, like I said, just flipping and flopping between being purely not guilty and combined not guilty or not guilty by mental disease or defect. Unreal. But it gets worse. Honestly, as if that is possible in a case like this. It does, it gets worse. So the trial eventually takes place on June 17th, 2013. Brian's defense, they argued that he basically wasn't guilty due to involuntary intoxication. That's right, due to involuntary intoxication. Involuntary intoxication? Sorry, was somebody mainlining him alcohol through his veins? I think you'll find that at a wedding, no one is involuntarily intoxicated. People are very voluntarily intoxicated. Sometimes you do get a bit hammered because, you know what, you tend to be staying at a hotel, everybody likes a bit of disco dancing, you need a few drinks to get over those nerves so you can get on and bust your grooves. You are not involuntarily intoxicated. But this is the argument. So basically what they're saying is he therefore wasn't able to form intent when he murdered Alicia and her unborn baby. Now this is ludicrous. Who in their right mind allows this kind of legal defense? Genuinely, it is ludicrous that being drunk could be used as a defense to excuse you of murder. Bearing in mind, this guy is pretty conveniently not lucid at all when he murders this poor young woman and her baby, but is totally able to recall every single detail of it the next day. Wow, that's interesting. Now, people do get blackout drunk. There have been cases where people have got blackout drunk and they've murdered somebody and they go to prison for a very long time for that. And you buy into the fact that it was not typical of their behaviour and they were completely intoxicated, and you know what? They're guilty as hell no matter what. But one of the things that denotes that is they cannot remember what they did, and they genuinely can't. It's like they literally were at the level where their actions could not be recalled. This guy recalled every single detail in order, in absolute order. That isn't somebody who is so drunk that they don't know what they're doing. That is somebody who is calculating, cold and premeditated, understands exactly what they've done and went ahead and did it. So he's lucid to be able to remember everything that happened on the night, also to use that precise detail in his confession. And even though he did have a blood alcohol level that was between 2 to 4 times the legal limit, a lot of people are like that every Friday night. It doesn't take that much to be over the legal limit. The reason the legal limit is there is because you don't want people who are even a tiny bit inebriated to be in a car, because they can be dangerous. We all know people who are drunk are a little bit gung-ho. It's intriguing when there are studies where people smoke cannabis versus when they have drinks, and they've actually looked at that. The person who smokes cannabis, ironically, tends to be a safer driver because they're paranoid as hell. They have the fear, so they make sure that they drive slowly and precisely. Whereas the person who's drunk, they're like, I can drive this car. I can drive fast. It tends to bolster a person's confidence. It doesn't remove the confidence. That's why we have those legal limits. It isn't about the person having such an amount in their blood that makes them horrendously incompetent and unable to recall what's happening. It's just a level that is 2 to 4 times that small amount that you are allowed when it comes down to moving a vehicle. So arguably, that's not enough for him to be blackout drunk. And like I said, he's not blackout drunk because he recalls every detail. But I don't know who they let onto the jury. I don't. Because somehow, in spite of what I've talked about, and as blindingly obvious as it is that this guy is 100% guilty, the outcome of that trial was a hung jury. It was split 10 to 2. So he is found guilty of the charge of sexual assault, but the jury could not come to a unanimous verdict on the counts of murder. Yeah. Some people in that jury were like, I don't know whether he murdered her. I think all the evidence demonstrates that he most definitely did murder. I don't know whether he did. Which bit are you struggling with? Is it the confession? I don't know whether that confession was done in a lucid way. It was very detailed and graphic. Are you struggling with the fact that he was able to recall literally every single thing that he did? And what about the fact that he treated and abused him in such a horrible way in the past? I still don't know whether he's guilty. Are you lucid, or are you 12 times over the limit and that's why you're making no sense whatsoever? Honestly, cannot bear it when this kind of thing happens. They would still have me in a room with the rest of those jury members, if not everyone agreed that he was guilty, I would be the person in the jury effect where psychologically one person can change everybody's mind, because no matter who was saying he was not guilty, we would not be leaving until they all agreed that he was without a doubt guilty, because it's glaringly obvious to anybody who's older than 2.5 years of age. But anyway, for the intents and purposes of this trial, it's considered to be a mistrial because of those people not agreeing, and it's baffling. And in fact, it baffles a lot of people, one of whom is Mark Winkle, that's the county sheriff's investigator. He said that from the outside looking in, and being a seasoned investigator, it was clearly a slam dunk as far as they were concerned. It was going to be that he's guilty as hell. The perpetrator had confessed. The evidence aligned with the confession. What could possibly go wrong? Clearly, an idiot or two within the jury. And I'm sorry, that might sound disrespectful towards the jury members who went not guilty. But you're idiots if you're watching this, just to be clear. I don't want anybody to feel that I am mincing my words. You are absolute idiots. And I genuinely hope you have no jobs in power, because it would be terrifying to imagine that people like you could listen to evidence like that and still come to the conclusion that he might not be guilty of murder. Genuinely. Alicia's mother, Sherry, was absolutely devastated by this. Of course she was. She wants her daughter's killer going to prison, ideally forever. She said, I was so shocked that I walked out of the courtroom as soon as they said hung jury. Even more shocking, the jury members who couldn't find him guilty, they were women. For two women to actually say that they couldn't find him guilty because they felt he was intoxicated after hearing all of the evidence, according to Sherry, was mind-boggling. I absolutely agree. What was going on in their mind? Oh, I mean, at the end of the day, he was drunk. So was he really, really responsible? Well, I mean, yeah. Just going to throw it out. Yeah, he was definitely responsible. Oh, but we've all got drunk. We've all done things we shouldn't have done. I am not imagining that dancing on the table at your office party and showing your bra is in the same context or category as murder. But I'm just saying, these things happen. Where's that cattle prod? Where's the taser? I just need to do some classical conditioning with this particular jury member. Sorry, I digress. Going down that journey where, again, I'm queen of the universe with inappropriate methods of dealing with difficult jury members. But it is, as Sherry says, utterly mind-boggling. And she's having to deal with this. The family's having to deal with this ludicrous reality, all the whilst dealing with the loss of this beautiful girl. Now, Sherry, Alicia's mother, was somebody who was horrified by what had played out, and she actually started lobbying to change the voluntary intoxication law. She wanted it to be abolished in Wisconsin, and she managed to achieve her goal. And actually, other states followed. So in total, that defense was removed from use in 32 states. Actually, it should not be ever allowed, let alone 32 states. It should be eradicated. It's as simple as that. And she said, never again did I want a parent, a friend, a family member to sit in a courtroom and hear alcohol being excused for anything. So she set up a change petition. And part of it actually read this. I made a promise at my daughter's funeral that I would not stop fighting for justice. And I've attended every motion hearing. I will not give up. Brian Cooper and others who use intoxication as a defence must be held accountable for their crimes and be sentenced accordingly. It is unbearable to think that my family must once again hear graphic testimony, view footage of his confession and the horrible things he did to my daughter and her unborn child, and see her lifeless body. I'm haunted by these images. My daughter no longer has a voice. I beg you to move this bill forward, to bring justice to my daughter and protect other victims of such crimes. Please do not fail her and others who have suffered at the hands of those that claim intoxication as a defence. So what an amazing woman. In spite of her own pain, she made sure that a legacy occurred, that Alicia's life, yes, was lost, and her grandchild's life, yes, was lost, and that is unbelievably punishing for her. But she doesn't want others to suffer the same fate. It doesn't change anything for her, because unfortunately, Brian was still able to use that voluntary intoxication as a defence for the second trial, but she wanted damn straight to know that nobody else would suffer because of it. So as I've said, he's still able to use this defence for the second trial because it's grandfathered in. That means that as his trial was pre-existing, was based on that law, the old defence could still be used. But fortunately, it's never going to be able to be applied in future cases, and that is all down to Sherry. So the new trial begins on the 2nd of May 2014. This is almost a year after the first. You imagine the trepidation of the family, can't you? Because, like I said, the authorities believed it was a slam dunk case. They didn't think there was going to be an issue. They thought that Brian was going to go down, full stop, that he'd be found guilty of murder. And at the end of the day, it was, as far as they could see, intentional homicide, and he'd admitted to that. And yet, as we know, in the prior trial, it hadn't gone that way. So the family couldn't even have the confidence that in this case, it was going to go their way. And that must be absolutely horrifying. So trial begins May 2014. Fortunately, I don't know, a little bit of common sense and logic prevails, and he's found guilty, thank God, on both counts of first degree intentional homicide. I know it's not acceptable to have streamers and party poppers in a courtroom, because with respect, there is not a lot to celebrate. You've lost somebody of incalculable meaning. You've lost their unborn child. You never got to know them. There is no celebration. I appreciate that. But in my head, that's what happens when he's found guilty of both of these murders. There's just like streamers and lots of confetti and party poppers going off in his face at quite a high propensity level, like stronger than a paintball, that kind of thing, repeatedly, maybe for 5 or 6 hours. Throwing out there. Again, not saying it's going to happen, just saying it would be deeply satisfying should it happen. So he's found guilty on both counts of first degree intentional homicide. He's sentenced to 2 life sentences without the possibility of being released to extended supervision. The verdict was actually reached within an hour, thank God. And I genuinely feel that when they recalled the jury to actually give that verdict, I think the family would have felt settled, because when you get a result so quickly, it's going to go one way or the other. But in a case like this, which as far as I'm concerned is very much open and shut, when people with any sense of logic or intelligence are actually on the jury, when you get a quick result, it's because they unanimously agreed and it was an easy conclusion to come to. Now, Judge Ellers, they said that in listening to Brian's statement, he did not hear an apology to the family of his victims. And he said, "This is troubling for me."
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
It doesn't speak well, sir, of your character. He also said the testimony from the doctor about the brutality of this assault and the ultimate murder of Alicia and her child is extremely troubling for me. I consider the severity of the whole offence, not just the strangulation, but the assault you imposed on the body of Alicia Bromfield to be an extremely troubling factor. Now, Brian, of course, appealed his sentence. It's what they do. And the reason that he did this is he argued for a new trial. I just want another trial. I just want another. I've had a few, but I want more. Genuinely. He doesn't feel he's received a fair trial. Is it possible that when somebody keeps doing things like this, thumbscrews can be applied? I know it's not. Again, I'm living in my little fantasy where thumbscrews from the 15th century are seen as an appropriate torture method. We don't do that in a civilised society, Emma. I appreciate that. Sorry, it was one of those intrusive thoughts. It came into my head. I had to share it with you. But this is what he does. So in this arguing for this new trial, It's down to a report by a Dr. Richard Tover, who's an expert witness, and it was concluded, apparently, quote, only because Cooper's consumption of alcohol and THC withdrawal resulted in temporary disinhibitions. It was highly unlikely that Cooper had the ability to form intent. So, apparently, the opinion of Dr. Tover had been excluded in Brian's second trial, and Brian argued that this violated his right to present a defence. So, that doctor, who I don't know why such defence was ignored in the first trial, I would imagine because it made no sense and they didn't actually think it would be that helpful, because any other expert would walk in and totally disregard it and rip it to pieces. And I don't know where Dr. Tover gets his main income from. I'm throwing it out there that maybe it's from www.paymeanythingandillbeyourexpertwitnessandsaywhateveryoulike.com, something like that. But it doesn't make any sense. The idea that Brian couldn't form intent, of course he could form intent. He was intentional from the get-go. He wanted her. When she wouldn't be with him, he took her in the most brutal and graphic of ways. Fortunately, his appeal was unsuccessful, and it was actually argued that the expert report wasn't disclosed in a timely manner, and it was concluded that not including Dr. Tover's opinion didn't actually violate his right to a defence, because he was defended, he did have an attorney speaking out for him, and he was guilty as hell. That's why he was found guilty. Literally, the jury could have looked at that report and it would have taken them 30 seconds to disregard it. Now, Sherry actually went ahead and sued Home Depot and Grand Flower Growers. And she did this on the grounds that despite Brian being known to be emotionally unstable and violent, that they failed to notice a pattern of misconduct. Brian hadn't even taken part in the anger management counselling that he'd been required to do. I mean, that in itself demonstrates what an arrogant and superior mindset he's got. He's got this big problem, but he doesn't care enough to actually do anything about it. Also, he was said to have quite a history of being really inappropriate with women colleagues. He'd received complaints from a number of employees, including Alicia. And one employee had actually said that he'd harassed her so badly she'd had to quit her job. And as I've said, Alicia made a complaint in which she said that she didn't want to be alone with Brian, but he still remained in a position of power over her as her manager. Now, though the lawsuit was initially dismissed, the decision was actually fortunately and rightly reversed. So Judge Hamilton, who oversaw that case, said that though Brian wasn't actually in the store when he killed Alicia, he used, quote, supervisory authority over Alicia, which was given to him by the defendants. And it was said that he threatened to fire or reduce her hours if she didn't go with him to his sister's wedding, which he was only able to do because the defendants made him Alicia's supervisor. So I'm really glad that Alicia actually was thought of as an individual who was coerced and forcibly put in these situations, and that Sherry was successful in that, because the reality is that Alicia would never have been anywhere near him if they had done their job, if they had removed him having any power or authority over her. Unfortunately, Alicia instead was left in the lion's den, so to speak. Now, in 2014, Sherry, who is amazing as far as I'm concerned, she's an incredible woman, she founded the Purple Project in honour of Alicia and Ava. And what that project does is it provides financial and emotional support to single young mothers who need it. Also provides access to grief counselling, also for retreats for parents who've lost their children. I just think that people like Sherry are unbelievable. The humanity in their fingertips is more than so many of us have in our whole bodies. This resilience in the face of trauma that is quite astonishing and relatively unique, where they want to make an impact on other people's lives because it keeps their own loss alive. Alicia is alive in every good deed that's done through this. Alicia is present every time her mother helps somebody in such a situation, and that legacy is a beautiful thing. It's devastatingly sad, but it's just beautiful at the same moment. Sherry said that she has been left with a tremendous loss, and that if she hadn't done something purposeful with the anger that she felt, she knew it would actually destroy her, that she needed to replace that with something different, something better. And she said that she heard a voice deep inside whisper, choose love, not hate. Oh, that sends chills through me, it really does. It really does. It's so profound, isn't it? something within her, something representative of the love that she has for her beautiful daughter and her grandchild. Maybe it was Alicia saying, choose love, not hate. And she did. So setting up that purple project, she was able to focus on all the love that she had for her treasured daughter, all the love that she had for her treasured granddaughter. And ultimately, yes, she has lost them in this dimension, but the work that she now does here will hopefully be something that when she finally meets Alicia again, and of course her beautiful daughter Ava, her daughter will let her know how proud she was that indeed she did choose love. Today's case is heartbreaking, isn't it? It's heartbreaking that we're talking about a beautiful little girl that never got to be, that we're talking about a life where Alicia is concerned that was so full of potential and beauty and hope, where we're talking about the selfishness of one man's desires that led to the destruction of so much, that stole the future for so many in different ways. My hat goes off to Sherry. My hat goes off to anyone who can take something so rotten, so broken, so dark, and make something beautiful from its ashes. And she's managed to do that. I genuinely hope that Brian breathes in only pain for the rest of his eternity. I hope the rottenness within his core festers and in the end distorts every waking moment for him, because he deserves that. He's a violent sexual predator, and no woman would ever be safe if he was present in their world. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.